Hey, welcome to the Energy Question with David Blackman. I'm your host, David Blackman, and my special guest today is Genevieve Collins, the State Director for Texas at Americans for Prosperity. It's been a year, Genevieve, since we talked last, which seems pretty incredible to me.
It has been far too long, but you are busy and doing an amazing job with this whole thing, and everyone's already listening to you. So, of course, you've been busy and it's been a year, but I'm thrilled to be back.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you taking the time. When we talked a year ago, you were in the middle of the Texas legislative session, and I know y'all were working on several pretty big issues and had really good outcomes, didn't you?
We did. You know, the Texas legislative session was a wild journey last year because we had regular session goes from January through May 31st. And so for your listeners in Texas, we're only in session once every 2 years. So we have to get a lot of work done in a super short amount of time. But it turns out that we didn't get as much work done as we needed to. And so we went into four special sessions.
Yeah.
And what AFP, what we were involved in, is some really historic things. First, passing historic property tax relief to Texas citizens, giving back $18 billion of taxpayer money in the form of property tax relief to Texas homeowners and commercial landowners. In addition, we helped pass seven healthcare bills, really making sure that we can expand access while reducing the cost of healthcare and enforcing price transparency. And then we did some work on some housing bills, because if you didn't know it, the new state crane in Texas is the new state bird in Texas is the crane. We got cranes building buildings everywhere. And so we need to make sure that we have housing supply at an affordable price for all these 1,300 people moving to Texas every day. And lastly, we worked on school choice, which did not pass this legislative session, but we're still staying on it and working towards it in the next legislative session.
1,300 a day moving to Texas?
Yes.
That number, I remember talking with Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst about that about 12 years ago now, and it was 500 a day. And right now it's 1,300 a day.
Well, Texas is the land of opportunity. It's the land of prosperity, optimism, innovation. So why, and good tax policy. So why wouldn't people want to move here?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I've been here all my life.
Yeah, me
never
too.
Seen a reason to move. So
exactly.
So I should have done this first, but just remind everyone what your mission at Texans for Prosperity is. You know, obviously you're an advocate on these big issues, but just talk about what you're trying to achieve.
So Americans for Prosperity is the largest nonpartisan policy and grassroots organization, not only in Texas, but across the country. I currently run 14 offices across the state of Texas. We have 26 full-time staff, 60 part-time staff, and last year we had 175,000 unique volunteers and activists join us in policy fights to improve the life of Texans. And what I would say, David, what people need to know is really that at AFP, we are the taxpayer champion. We don't work on any social issues. We work on solely taxpayer issues. So we're a bit of a generalist in the space of policy because we don't specialize in one specific vertical more than another. But we really look at how do we keep taxes low? How do we make sure taxpayer dollars are spent wisely on things that are needed? And how do we make sure that the government doesn't think that our tax dollars are their money, but how do they realize that it's our money that we are supporting?
Well, nowhere does our government, and I'm not talking about our state government here in Texas, which has been pretty wise where energy is concerned, but the federal government, nowhere does our federal government allocate tax dollars more unwisely than in the energy space, particularly in this administration. I think I've made that pretty clear to everyone, my views on that. You recently kicked off a new campaign called Unleashing American Energy with an event in Lake Jackson. You had Congressman Randy Weber there, who sits on the Energy and Commerce Committee in the House, speaking at that event. Talk about what you're trying to accomplish with this new campaign you're running.
Sure. So this is really exciting because I believe that when Texas is energy dominant, America is energy abundant. And that abundance not only helps the rest of our nation, but our allies abroad. And so when thinking about energy in Texas, we wanted to work with Congressman Randy Weber kicking off our campaign because his congressional district really does impact the world. 65% of LNG is exported from his district, and 65% of the strategic petroleum reserves are in his district, are coming from his district. And so we really thought we have a voice to the people of that community because their one in two jobs basically are related to the energy sector in his congressional district. And we had over 50 people on a Thursday night in Lake Jackson. Full disclosure, I'd never been there. I didn't even know where I was. But these are folks that are very invested in the energy sector and very attuned to what's going on and very active about needing to reshape the narrative on energy in America and how basically energy has created the Texas miracle, and that can be exported to other states.
Yeah, and you talk about the LNG exports. I'm sure the congressman talked about that issue, put some real emphasis on it. Did he talk about the permitting freeze, for example, that the
We
Biden
spent
administration re recently put into effect?
a lot of time talking about the permitting freeze. And now I have to just set the stage for your listeners. This is a policy conversation for like an hour and 15 minutes. This is not like any fluff stuff. We get really meaty into the policy on what's been happening. And so he talked a lot about the ban that the Biden administration has done on LNG and how laborious the permitting process is and how HB1 or excuse me, HR1 that Congress passed last year really focused on how do we change the certainty of permitting? Because it's now taking, as all of you guys know, 5 to 7 years to get a permit. And at that point in time, you don't even know if you're going to get the permit. And so HR1 really focused on saying, hey, how do we stop every single bureau having to approve this process? We should run this whole permitting process in parallel. And if it, in 2 years it's not permitted, it's or approved, it's automatically approved. Now the House passed that, but what he was sharing is that how difficult the permitting process is towards innovation, towards entrepreneurism, and towards his own district, who's really supporting a lot of American companies and a lot of American interests in their district with their businesses, and how they can't continue to thrive and create better jobs and better opportunities for all Americans. So we talked ad nauseum about the permitting process and the need for this massive reform, and how sad it is that the Biden administration is creating far more barriers than creating more opportunities. And so appointment more than anything. And the congressman really drove that point home.
Yeah, that's a big part of the problem. I just so you know, I spent a long time and part of my career working those permitting processes, at the Department of Interior and EPA and other federal agencies. And it's so much of it is left up to the discretion of the agencies. And so when you get an administration that's generally pro-industry, it doesn't take nearly as long to get those permits as it does in an administration like this one that, is trying to discriminate against industry. It's such a unique thing that we're seeing here. This administration is picking and choosing winners now. And
Correct.
so it's becoming more difficult for oil and gas and nuclear and, the coal to get their permits while at the same time it, you know, they're trying to make it easier and easier for wind and solar, although it's not really working out for them. But what can be done at the federal level? I think it's apparent that Congress is pretty paralyzed at this point. I mean, absent a big sea change election, is there any real hope of getting any streamlining done at the federal level?
I'm an eternal optimist, and so I would always say yes, there's got to be hope. I'd say what's been interesting is seeing how these wars that we have been that are going on in the world are now really hurting our strategic petroleum reserves. I
Oh,
think
man.
that is a really interesting wake-up call for a lot of our members that may not have the same point of view as you and I on the free market, with oil and gas being an energy or being a huge opportunity and sector driver. But I think more people are understanding that NEPA reform needs to happen, and that nuclear is a really viable option. We talked about that with the congressman, and that it's not only clean, it's becoming really safe, and it's starting to become smaller.
Yes, yes.
And I think that that is a real opportunity for innovation, but also, how can we start building bridges between the fact that we've got conservationists and environmentalists, and that those two people never want to see the same thing, even though they fundamentally believe in the same things, right? And
Right.
that nuclear is a bridge to bring those folks together. There are going to be people that are just going to say oil and gas, fossil fuel industry, coal should just go to hell, and that it's a bad thing forever. I don't share that perspective. AFP doesn't necessarily share that perspective. We believe that it's an all of the above solution. But I think that Congress and the Senate have to have more pro-energy legislators. I'm just not sure that the Democrat Party is okay with being more like left of center on this policy rather than on the far tail of the bell curve on the progressive side. The progressives have really taken hold of the narrative. And I think that there's a lot of room for Democrats to come back to the center, if you will, and you can meet a ton of moderates and right of center Republicans to really create some great policy. That's the goal. That's what we are working for in elections this year. But, at the top, fundamentally, as you know, things have to change.
Yeah. Well, we do have an opportunity here in Texas, of course. We have the demonstration project out there at Abilene Christian with the molten salt reactor. They're about to have a big kickoff event later in March for that project. And of course, that is a reactor the size of a refrigerator that can be located
Unreal.
right in the market centers where the power is needed. You don't have to build hundreds of miles of transmission and hopefully the state can find ways to encourage a pretty rapid build out of that kind of modular nuclear technology. And it seems to me Texas is pretty uniquely situated to be a real innovation center for that part of the energy space.
Well, that's already happening. So good
Yeah.
news there. While the federal side may be just a quagmire, the state of Texas is really doing a lot. We're in the interim. We will be in an interim session this year, which means our legislators really study the problems that they want to begin to solve in January of 2025. And there is a nuclear energy committee that's going to be looking at how do we understand the entire ecosystem of our energy sector and see how do we resource and better learn about nuclear specifically, not just oil and gas, right? And I think the congressman said it perfectly, that renewables have a part to play in the whole ecosystem, but they're a supporting actor role. They're not the lead actor, as the congressman says, and we believe the same thing. You can have an all of the above solution to create a portfolio of abundance that is then exportable to anyone else that we want to sell it to. But it shouldn't just be specific verticals when there's so many options on the table.
So, you know, with so much of the problem for nuclear is really just related to bad public relations. I mean,
right.
They still haven't overcome Three Mile Island, which was 45 years ago now.
Yeah.
How can we help? And I know AFP plays a big role in this, helping these industries to overcome these PR obstacles, because there's such horribly erroneous information about nuclear in the public domain, and the media never tries to get it right, as far as I can tell. So one of the things your organization is really helpful in doing is helping industries get past all that, right?
Yes, it is. And so we're going on what I would call a roadshow tour with different members, both in Congress, as well as in the State House and the State Senate. And we're going to be going on these kind of roadshows throughout the next 12 months, talking to grassroots activists, answering questions, but bringing legislators in to hear from their communities, to hear from business leaders, and to begin bridging those divides. I think so much misinformation has happened about nuclear, and it doesn't help that TV is about Chernobyl and all of these, you know, accidents, because they make good drama, right? But the reality is there's still people's lives. And, you know, we do a lot of things that, regardless of your industry, one big mistake shouldn't crater an entire industry. You can point to, you know, the 2008 banking crisis. Should we, you know, no longer have banks? I mean, this is crazy. So we're going to be going on an education campaign to around the state of Texas and really trying to meaningfully answer and, more importantly, engage with people that have no real experience with nuclear or don't have much experience with the entire ecosystem of all of the energy portfolio that Texas has, and really try to educate them and say, what do you think is going to be best? And why don't you join us in the fight to create this sense of abundance? Because when Texas is energy dominant, America's energy abundant.
Well, so we're recording this. It is we're 6 days from the Texas primary as we record this on March 5th. I know you guys are advocating on behalf of some candidates in these primaries. What's your outlook on this election this year? Are we, you know, Texas has been a red state for a long time. It's been 30 years now since the Democrats elected a statewide candidate in Texas.
Right.
What? How's this election shaping up in your view?
So the primary on Super Tuesday is going to be really interesting, not necessarily at the presidential level, but at the state level. So there's been a whole thing that's gone on in the Republican Party this year where a lot, I mean, I would say probably 60 state house candidates are being primary. And that's a lot. And they're being primaried for two reasons, and I'll go quickly here, but they're being primaried for two reasons. One, bad school choice votes. So the governor has gone all in, as well as the lieutenant governor, on passing school choice in the state of Texas. This has been a 40-year fight, and last year was the closest that Texas ever got to passing school choice.
Yeah.
There were 21 rural Republicans that voted with Democrats to basically kill the bill. So those folks, five people of those 21 retired, and 16 of those folks are being actively primaried with school choice candidates. We are engaged, and AFP is engaged in a lot of those races, because we think that every child should have a world-class education, regardless of the four walls with which they are within. And our point of view, quickly, is that this is not a fight between public versus private school. This is a kind of like the energy sector. How do we identify all of the options available to a child to best meet their need?
Yeah.
So we have the school choice situation. And then the other 45 candidates that are being primary were because they voted to impeach our Attorney General Ken Paxton. And he's going on what's, I guess, the media calls his revenge tour. And so there's just a lot of sea change that could potentially happen here in Texas. AFP, we've endorsed and are supporting 17 folks running for office, 10 of which, excuse me, 11 of which are incumbents, three are challenger candidates, and three are candidates filling open seats. And we really look at the entire platform: energy, healthcare, taxes, property tax, education, public safety. That's what we look at. We're not just solely focused on school choice.
Well, I mean, there are no more important issues than those issues. One national campaign we do have at stake here in Texas, statewide campaign, is Ted Cruz up for re-election. He seems very concerned about early polling in his race and the fact that he's likely to be overspent by at least a 3-to-1 margin, kind of like when he ran for against Beto O'Rourke. How concerned is AFP about that election?
So I ran when I ran for Congress, I ran against Colin Allred.
And
And
almost
so
beat him. You came really close.
I did, but honestly, thank God I didn't make it, because I would hate being in Congress right now. Oh my gosh. But that's a separate topic for another day. So, I think Ted Cruz has a real race. The problem is not money. Colin Allred, I think he's got 20-to-1 on his closest Democrat primary challenger. So the problem is not going to be money. And we know that if Beto O'Rourke can spend $264 million to lose three times, money isn't the issue. What will be, and that's just the truth. These are the
It
facts.
is the truth.
But I think that it's going to be a close race. I think that Ted Cruz will ultimately win, but he's going to win by a very slim margin, like he did in 2018, probably 3 to 5 points. I think that Hispanic voters are changing their belief systems and really how they're being treated by both parties, but they've historically been voting for Democrats, and you can see that in how South Texas really has morphed. They've elected many Republicans, Republican mayors, Republican congressional members, and so that is a sea change that I think is going to keep evolving into a tidal wave by 2030, with more Hispanic voters and more young Hispanic voters voting in the Republican Party. So I think that Ted Cruz ultimately wins, but it's going to be a painful fall.
Well, a lot of that sea change in the Hispanic voter attitudes is driven by the illegal immigration situation at the border, right? Because, I mean, it's those communities on the border
Very
that
much.
are hardest hit by all of this. And, I will never understand why the Biden administration has created this crisis and allowed it to linger this long. It's really tragic for those communities.
I have an office in McAllen, David, and over the last year, what we've been doing, and I need to invite you to be a part of our next one. We
I'd love
are
to.
hosting, we're hosting border tours where we bring people in from all over the country and we take them to Customs and Border Protection headquarters, where they get a briefing from the sector chief. What is really happening when it comes to illegal apprehensions, encounters? Fentanyl, human smuggling, the dangers, the weather, the barrier structures that are needed. And they really kind of provide this overall understanding of what is really happening at the ground level. And then furthermore, how little funding they have compared to what Congress can allocate. But we take them to a briefing, then we take them to actually see the Rio Grande River at a border area, at the water district for McAllen. I was there the first time when we did this. We've done five of these now, and we're standing on the bank of the river of Texas, and on the other side is Mexico, and a gentleman came down and started blowing up his pontoon boat, and he looked at us like we were the morons, like, get the heck out of here, we're coming over. And it was so blatant. And then we take people to see the humanitarian side of things, from the Catholic Charities. And so it's our goal is to create border evangelists, that every state is really a border get these folks regardless and in your state. And we need to have a meaningful conversation, not just around border policy in general as a nation, not just in the Senate or in the House, but really as a nation to understand how do we secure our borders? How do we protect our laws? But how do we also recognize that there is an opportunity to be compassionate, but also uphold our laws? And how do we thread that needle as a nation? And that's the conversation we're trying to spark. It's like, no, we don't believe in amnesty. No, we don't believe anyone should come here, or that there should be loopholes in the asylum process. And that, yes, we need to secure our border. But there are real people that are having serious problems and serious threats. And they need to be treated seriously, not just through a porous and open border.
Right. You know, that's the biggest problem is just at this point, they're just waving everybody through without really knowing who they are, why they're coming here. There's no real due diligence being practiced.
Correct.
It's really disgusting, frankly. Last thing I don't want to leave before we touch on this, you've been writing columns in the New York Post, one of my favorite platforms, news platforms on the internet, and also making appearances on Sirius XM as the ambassador for Texas, talking about why people should be moving from the blue states to the red states. Talk about what you're doing there.
I mean, David, let me be honest. I really just want to be the ambassador of Texas. So yeah. That's the job that I really want. So maybe I'm trying to manifest this.
but let me know if I can do anything to help in that.
Yeah, I will. Don't worry. But, you know, it's important to tell the story of Texas. So many people have a kind of myopic vision of Texas. They believe we all wear cowboy hats and still ride horses to our offices, right? Dead serious. That's happened. People have asked me that. But they also, but people are also moving here without an understanding of why. And my goal in writing, I've written two op-eds for the New York Post, and one is really talking about the border crisis and what needs to happen. Mayor Eric Adams, he says, we can't house these illegal immigrants and these migrants anymore in these five-star hotel rooms. It's we've only had, I think he said, we've had 60,000 illegals come here and we can't afford to resource them. And I said, well, what the heck are you talking about? Texas is absorbing millions of them. You think we have the resources? So it's trying to call a spade a spade. And making sure more people know the reality. And New York Post has it's the fourth largest readership in the country. But then the other side of it is also, how are we telling the story and the promise of Texas that we are giving $18 billion back to taxpayers through property tax relief, that we are really trying to pass good policy? You know, some of the social issues, they're the ones that spark all of this consternation and debate and get people fired up. But the reality is that Texas works, and more people need to know that, because we are the model, or can be the model, for the rest of the country on good policy, low taxes, low cost of living, low regulations, and great opportunities and access to capital. And that's why people are moving here. And that story just needs to be told.
I can't agree more. Genevieve, thank you so much for being here. Before we go, let everybody know where they can find you and support what you're doing.
So find us on Twitter, and please message us on Twitter, because we are hosting our next Unleashing American Energy roundtable in Dallas on April 4th with Pfluger, who also sits on the Energy and Commerce Committee. Message us on @TexasAFP, that's Texas AFP, like Americans for Prosperity. And you can find me on Twitter at GCollinsTX. Please follow us, engage with us, and help us tell the story of why energy is so imperative and why this is a national security opportunity that we can solve.
Hey, thank you for the shout out on Congressman Pfluger. He's doing a great job out there representing the Permian Basin in West Texas, doing fabulous work in Washington, D.C. I need to get him back on the show, too. It's been 6 months since he was on.
You're just busy, David. You know, everyone wants to talk to you.
I guess. Yeah, I hope so. Anyway, hey, thank you so much. You're doing great work. You're one of the most effective spokespeople I've ever seen. And anything we can do to be helpful here at the Energy Question, All you have to do is get in touch and let us know.
I will do, my friend. Thank you so much.
And thank you to our great producer, Eric Perrell, and the Sandstone Group for hosting our podcast. I'm David Blackman. That is all for now.